Welcome, everybody, to the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast, where we interview Amberly Grant and talk about cash flowing real estate, dramatically increasing your income, and immigration. Hello, hello, hello. My name is Mindy Jensen, and with me, as always, is my can definitely bench press more than me co-host, Scott Trench.
Thank you, Mindy. That intro was very uplifting.
All right. Scott and I are here to make financial independence less scary, less just for somebody else, to introduce you to every money story, because we truly believe financial freedom is attainable for everyone, no matter when or where you're starting.
That's right. Whether you want to retire early and travel the world, or go on to make big time investments in assets like real estate, start your own business, or build a rental property portfolio on a foundation of frugality and a few wonderful opportunities over the years, we'll help you reach your financial goals and get money out of the way so you can launch yourself towards those dreams.
Scott, today's money moment, stay with me, is strive for inbox zero. Hold on, I'm getting there. You know how you have that promotions tab in your email? Sometimes it's easy to get lost in it and rack up some spending. 50% off on Amazon, buy one, get one free on clothes, reduce prices. And all of a sudden you just spent like $500. If you think about it, you could instantly delete everything in your promotions tab and then never see it and never tempt yourself. Because if you weren't thinking about it beforehand, some email saying, here's a free thing or here's some money off of something shouldn't tempt you to buy that product.
I love it, Mindy. I've been running Inbox Zero for the entirety of my time here at Bigger Pockets. Josh Dorkin, our founder, trained me on that in the first week, and I have never looked back ever since. So all of my inboxes are cleaned out, personal and work, almost every day. Not every day, but almost every day.
Josh missed that lesson with me, Scott, and I will say that I know you don't want your inbox at Inbox Zero,
Mindy. I've worked with you for years. I know that ain't the case over there. So great money tip for Mindy.
Yeah, if you send me an email and you don't get a response, send it again because it probably got buried.
Yeah, and then text her.
Yes, exactly. All right. Do you have a money moment for us? You can email moneymoment@biggerpockets.com. All right. Scott, today we're talking with my friend Amberly Grant, and I'm so excited to bring her in. She has quite the story of growing up without a lot of money, and then starting out her real estate mogul empire by buying a house in an expensive city and making it work and then repeating the process. And not only did she repeat the process, but if you listen carefully, you can repeat it too.
Yeah. I think you're going to really enjoy this episode. We're going to talk about some really wild swings in fortune for Amberly over a 3 to 5 year period. And some of the numbers sounded unbelievable at first, but then I was like, I kind of did that. I lived on probably around $1,300 to $1,500 a month in Denver from, you know, not 2017, 2018, 2019, but from 2014 till 2017, probably before things started doing that. And I had some big income swings with the opportunity to come here at Bigger Pockets. So, you know, I just saw a lot of parallels in my story. Literally, we were on parallel streets, probably one or two streets over in with one of the properties that we had around the same time. So what a small world. Mine was also an up-down duplex like hers. So just kind of a cool, a lot of similarities there. And it was great to reconnect with Amberly and hear about the crazy success and wonderful life she's built.
When it comes to financial guidance, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When Mindy and I want to upgrade our wallets, we turn to NerdWallet.
Scott's right. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products.
Before NerdWallet, Mindy and I were paying for vacations in cash, missing out on miles, and not even knowing what we're leaving on the table.
But now we're flying through the skies for free, thanks to our new cards with more miles and upgrades than ever.
So if you want more travel rewards, hotel upgrades, or airport lounge access, no matter where you go next, let NerdWallet help you make it happen with a killer travel card.
Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at NerdWallet.com.
NerdWallet, finance smarter.
As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval, and terms of each credit card issuer apply.
This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that I turned one of my first homes into an Airbnb? It's true. And it even helped me get the extra income I needed to launch my real estate career. So if you want to try your hand at making even more income with your property, Airbnb is the place to be. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Real estate investing is great, but for some, the tenant phone calls and clogged toilets aren't all that attractive. So how do you invest in real estate without getting your hands dirty? Invest for truly passive income with Pine Financial Group. Pine's mortgage fund offers an 8% preferred return and an attractive profit split, with 70% of profits going to the investors. You'll earn passive income by participating in lending to house flippers. And it's secure because senior lien holders, that's you, get paid first. Their rigorous underwriting process and the backing of the physical asset provide additional security in case of borrower default. Plus, by investing with Pine Financial Group, you contribute to the revitalization of communities by redirecting your funds from Wall Street to Main Street, supporting local economies and generating profits simultaneously. This investment is reserved for accredited investors. But if you are not accredited, Pine Financial has options for you too. Take control of your investments and secure a stable 8% annual return today. Visit pinefinancialgroup.com/biggerpockets to learn more about the fund. That's pinefinancialgroup.com/biggerpockets. Amberly Grant is a real estate investor who is originally from Canada and now lives in the Denver area. She is technically Coast Fi, but has a full-time job still. She's also the host of Tuesday Fin Talks. Amberly, welcome to the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast. I'm so excited to talk to you today.
This is so cool. Thanks for having me.
Amberly, let's start off the show by telling a little bit about yourself and how you became invested in finance and investing.
Well, I have been really interested in this since I was very young. I grew up with a family who didn't make much money, and I got my first finance book when I was 15 years old, The Wealthy Barber, and that changed my life. I learned all about compound interest. If I had saved, you know, $20 a month from the time that I was 15 years old to, what, 40, you know, I'd have millions of dollars. And that just was something I didn't think was fathomable beforehand. So to me, it was really an eye-opening experience. After that, I like read every finance book I could get my hands on, from like Susie Orman to Rich Dad Poor Dad, like all those starter ones that, you know, back in the early 2000s. And then, of course, evolved into blogs and podcasts and things like that. So just something that I wanted to not mimic what my parents were going through, which is in their 60s, 70s, not having money. I could see that kind of view of life for them. And I decided I did not want to walk that path.
Let's talk about buying your first property. What was that journey like? And how do you go from growing up without a ton of money to, I'm going to buy a house?
My family did not have a motto of purchasing property. It didn't make sense to them for many reasons. They just could never figure it out, right? Especially a down payment. We couldn't even buy a washer and dryer or a fridge when it broke. So like they were not, you know, putting a down payment on a house. When in 2019, I was with an ex-partner and we decided we were going to move in together. And everyone says, do not move in with someone you aren't married to, which is really great advice. And I would continue to give that advice. Thankfully, the very practical nature that I had talked in advance, you know, like who's paying what. What happens if we break up in a year? What happens if one of us dies? You know, we kind of went through that checklist before buying a property together. And so in 2019, we found a property that fit my criteria and a bit of his. He wanted a turnkey property, nothing we had to work on. I wanted to work on it, but decided that was something I can compromise. I wanted a property that I could split up and create into a duplex so that we could live by ourselves, but someone else was paying our mortgage or close to it. So I ended up finding a property, turned the basement into a walkout one bedroom apartment and started to offer that to actually the FIRE community, as well as put it on Airbnb. And for a year, we didn't pay more than $200 towards our property, which was awesome. And then we broke up. So that was my first property.
And so what happens next?
Yeah. Thankfully, we were really good to each other. we had already had these conversations, right? What happens with the equity of the place if it's 1 year? So it has actually only, I think we lasted about 8 months. And then we separated. And so during that separation, we decided, honestly, this is a really great thing for maybe people to do if they're in the situation. We decided that on Friday at 3 p.m., each of us has to send the other an email saying whether we wanted the property and if we were going to buy the other person out or we wanted to sell it. And we both sent the emails. I sent him an email saying, I will buy you out. And we had agreed on the buyout would be no equity in the property, just down payments. We put 20% down, so $100,000. And so just down payments. And then he sent me an email saying he did not want the property. So that worked out really well. The sad thing for me, though, was this was February of 2020. I was running an Airbnb in the basement. I think we all know what happens a month later. I was running an Airbnb in the basement. His mom had invested in the property and we were going to be paying her back over 3 years. So I had to give between the two of them $80,000 before March of 2020 to get the property back, which was insane. And then in March, we all know Airbnb, you know, canceled all reservations for the next few months. And I felt like I was in a pickle.
And this was in the, where's this property located?
Denver, Colorado.
Okay. So you have $80,000. How do you come up with $80,000? And how does the journey progress from here?
I think in the back of my mind, I didn't know if I was probably prepping to leave the relationship or maybe I was going to buy a new house or something. I had $60,000 in cash. So I was just kind of, you know, seeing what I would do next with it. And then I was able to, when we had made the decision to split up, I ended up like paying them out in early March. So I just put every dollar of my paychecks towards paying them out. So I had $60,000 in savings. And then like I came up with $20,000 over like a 2 month period.
Okay. And can you give us a ballpark of kind of like how long it took you to save up that $60,000 in cash and kind of the monthly savings rate that you were able to achieve to you know, crank out the next 20 grand?
Yes. So when we bought the property in February of 2019, we were pretty much tapped out, like everyone is when you buy your first property, especially. I think I had like $15,000 in savings at that point. I was able to essentially get to $80,000 for March of 2020. So that took me one full year to get to $80,000. I had actually left a job that I was making $62,000. Moved to a job that I started making $115,000, and my like, total expenses every single month were $1,300. So literally every other penny that came in, I just saved.
We got to stop here and go back to this giant. Did you say $50,000 to $115,000?
Plus a 20% bonus. Yes.
Okay.
So it was like $130,000.
Were you in the same field? Were you in college and then you graduated and you went from like administrative assistant to CEO? Or how did you make this giant jump? Because that we're not going to just gloss over that. Sorry, we interrupt this finance story to talk about finances.
Yeah. So actually, I had graduated the University of Colorado Boulder in 2017. I got a job with the company I was working with. Turns out I'm really good at what I do. Like, so I was working at this company making college wages, right? Starting at $52,000 with a guaranteed 10% increase 1 year later, another 10% 1 year later. But at this job, I was known for turning around million-dollar projects. So like other PMs who were making $120,000 a year plus 20% bonuses would mess up projects. Then they would hand them to me. I would get back in the customer favor. I would turn the projects around and I would close them. And I was making literally $55,000, no bonuses. So I had for 6 months, I talked to the VP of our company, all this stuff saying, hey, I need a raise to get close to what other people are making so that it makes sense for me to be here. And they kept saying, well, you just got out of college. And I say, but then I do these projects. And so it was just back and forth. And so essentially I decided I'm going to leave. And our competitor, someone from my company had left to our competitor. They knew that it was really great. And so they brought me on.
Yeah. Here's anybody who's in the hiring business or the employee retention business, don't pay your employees like garbage and don't pay your star employee who's turning around projects like garbage. Tell her she's not worth what everybody else is making because she just graduated from college. there are old souls out there. You wouldn't believe this, but Scott is only 12 and he is running Bigger Pockets and has been for 11 years. He's just smart like that. It doesn't matter his age. He's actually 13. It doesn't matter somebody's age or level of experience. It matters their intelligence and their competence and their ability to get stuff done.
And I was 29 years old. That was one of my things too. It's like, I'm not just a normal college student. I traveled the world. I own my own businesses. And then I came here, right? So, and finished, did university and came to the company. And sure enough, 1 year later, they started reaching out to me again. They moved my manager in a different position. And they're like, hey, we need star people back. I'm like, okay, well, no thanks.
Okay, so just to some timeline things. In 2017, you graduated from college around the age 25, 26.
29.
At 29, you were 29 in 2017.
Correct.
Graduating college. Okay. And then you have this job situation. Did you graduate debt-free, or were there other financial assets getting you going at that point, or were you pretty was it pretty neutral, like a pretty was there student loans? Yeah, can you give us a snapshot of the financial position graduating college, and then how we got to that point of the big raise?
Yeah. So before that, I had checked my Social Security and I had made an average of $15,000 a year from the time I moved to the United States in 2007 to 2017. So I had done odd jobs, moved overseas, just did my own business. Turned out didn't work out really well. And then when I was 25, I decided to go and be serious about university. I went to the Community College of Denver first. The great thing about that is I was a non-traditional student, which means that I can apply for FAFSA and scholarships without my parents' income, which it didn't matter. My parents' income was zero. So I was able to go to university or to community college, and I would make about $3,000 a semester in my pocket from scholarships and FAFSA. Then I decided to apply to CU Boulder, even though the price tag of CU Boulder is $20,000 a year for the business school. And it like scared me. Oh my God, I'm Canadian. Like, who pays 20 grand a year for school, right?
You said 20,000. I'm like, that's it?
Yeah. So I also applied to CU Denver, but it was a commuter school. And I kind of wanted a CU Boulder has a much better reputation, top 30 universities in the US. So I applied to CU Boulder, got in, got a call from financial aid being like, hey, you actually got this scholarship, which will pay for all of your tuition for the entire time you're here. Which then I promptly cried for like 3 days straight and was like, oh my God, I did it. So I left university with zero debt, basically $0 to my name as well. And then got my first job. And literally my expenses at that point were $1,200 per month before I bought my house, which then were $1,300 per month.
Okay, awesome. So 2017, graduate college, zero, still able to save because you're spending so little. You're still living like a college student, it sounds like. And then we have this house situation that resolves in 2020. Leading up to 2020, of the next 3 years, you managed to accumulate $60,000, which empowers you to make this decision to buy out your ex-boyfriend and his mom's interest in the property with a hustle on top of that. Okay. So the other part of the equation here that is absolutely extraordinary that we have to dive into and get a beat on is, how are you living in Denver, Colorado in 2020 for $1,300 a month in a general sense? What's the day-to-day like? What's your car, housing, all that stuff? How do you figure that out?
Actually, every part of my life has a story, right? So my car was a 2013 Toyota Corolla. I used to have a company where I did I would coach people on their nutrition. I worked with luxury apartment buildings. I make food and deliver it to people's fridges and did like workshops and screenings, like film screenings. One of my clients was moving to New Zealand. So she actually needed help. She had like been there. Needed help figuring out her apartment and getting it sent. So I helped her out. She had a leased 2013 car. This was in 2013. She gave me the lease for free for 1 year. It was $137 a month to help her out. Then I bought out her lease for $13,000. So I got a brand new car that she'd only driven for 3 months. I drove it for the next 2 years, bought it out for $13,000. And that was my car. I still own it today. So that I had gotten in 2014. My house, because my upstairs, I lived with my partner. The downstairs was an Airbnb or a midterm rental for actually a friend of our community, Mark Troutman, who you guys have interviewed. So he stayed in our basement for a few weeks with his wife, Marge. And then that was part of like helping us pay our rent, our mortgage. And then I did the Airbnb thing. My everyday, I biked everywhere because I was right on a bike path. That's one of my criterias for the houses I own, is some sort of bike path or public transit.
What if I told you that I, Mindy Jensen, the queen of budgeting, the personal finance fanatic, sometimes forgot to cancel my subscriptions? I know, it's horrible. $10 here, $15 there. My useless subscription bills could have taken my whole family out to dinner multiple times. Rocket Money can make all that subscription sadness suddenly vanish. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. You can see all your subscriptions in one place and cancel money-sucking subscriptions with a tap. They'll even try to get you a refund for the last couple of months of wasted money and negotiate to lower your bills for you. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/bpmoney. That's rocketmoney.com/bpmoney. rocketmoney.com/bpmoney.
This show is sponsored by Airbnb. Did you know that a long time ago, before I ever started my real estate business, I turned one of my first primary residences into an Airbnb? And that's the extra income that I needed from Airbnb that gave me the confidence to go out and work for myself and eventually quit my 9-to-5 job. And now I have dozens of Airbnbs all over the country. I've even partnered up with the old David Green on a recent property in Scottsdale to take our portfolio to the next level. And of course, we host it on Airbnb. But you don't need to be a full-time real estate investor to start on Airbnb. As a matter of fact, I was self-managing 10 properties while working my 9-to-5 job, so I know anybody can do it. Think about it this way. You're looking for extra income and going on a vacation. Wouldn't it be great to rent out your space and let your property pay for itself while you're gone? I did this one time. I pitched my wife and my roommate, because we were house hacking, on the idea of renting out our home, and it paid for all of our expenses on a trip to Mexico City. So go and give it a try. It might just change your life, just like it did mine. And I really do mean that. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When it comes to financial guidance, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. When Mindy and I want to upgrade our wallets, we turn to NerdWallet.
Scott's right. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products.
Before NerdWallet, Mindy and I were paying for vacations in cash, missing out on miles, and not even knowing what we're leaving on the table.
But now we're flying through the skies for free, thanks to our new cards with more miles and upgrades than ever.
So if you want more travel rewards, hotel upgrades, or airport lounge access, no matter where you go next, let NerdWallet help you make it happen with a killer travel card.
Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at NerdWallet.com.
NerdWallet, finance smarter.
As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms of each credit card issuer apply.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you can make sure your ride stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, exhaust kits, turbochargers, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
All right, so we have addressed the almost unbelievable $55,000 to $115,000 base salary jump, and the perhaps even more unbelievable $1,300 a month expense load on living in Denver here. That explains the bulk of the $60,000 to $80,000 cash accumulation that we talked about there. With this foundation, it's not hard to imagine getting very wealthy over the next several years. So is that right? How does the journey play out and progress from here?
Yeah, I can't even imagine. Like, I could not imagine where I would be today, 5 years later. And I can't imagine where I'll be 5 years from now with what I've learned. So 2020, bought them out for $80,000 in March. freaked out. Airbnb is going to zero. What are we doing here? It all comes back. It's fine. Life happens. I pivot really quickly. So when I see something's on the horizon, I actually went to nurse rentals right away and never had one vacant day through all of 2020 for my rental. So awesome. Yeah. Worked out really well. So I just kept switching between midterm and short-term rentals, depending on what needed to be done, like with the law and stuff. So that was great. Accumulated all of that. I wasn't paying for lodging. So that was great. Still had my $115,000 a year job with a bonus. And so I just started socking money away to probably buy a new property. I like to say properties happen to me. I don't like go seek them. They just like come my way. So in January of 2021, I had a real estate agent I'd worked with for my last property approach me and say like, oh no, he like was checking in. And then I asked him like, hey, I have very specific criteria. Do you ever see these? He's like, these are never in Denver. And I was like, I know. If you see him, let me know. Turns out he had this seller who was like thinking of selling. He wasn't sure what he wanted to do, but he wanted to get out of Colorado because he's moved to Tennessee. It's a duplex, like a true duplex building. It's multifamily, zone 3 units. There's 2 units on it in downtown Denver. So this one is like Downey and Colfax, essentially. So right by the hospital there. I don't think I have enough money, not sure what I'm going to do here. Start negotiating with the seller. So I work directly with the seller on this one. And end up getting this property for $711,000. It's worth at least $750,000 at the time. Now it's worth so much more in downtown Denver. And this is one address, but a 3-bedroom upstairs, 1-bedroom downstairs, completely separate unit. That one I put 15% down. So I came up with $90,000 for that one and bought that one in April 1st. 2021.
And that 90,000 was just accumulated the same old fashioned, old school way that we just talked about here over the course of a little over a year and a half.
Yeah, literally like a year and a bit later.
Awesome. Okay. And so we've got how to go? What were the X's and O's on this property?
Yeah, the roof started leaking within 5 days of buying it. But what I do with that, I moved upstairs. I had to do some repairs and kind of flipping of that one, cosmetic changes to that one. So that's what I did for the next like 5 or 6 months. I think it was 6 months. I had friends come in and out. So like literally friends would fly in to help me do flooring. And, you know, the community of like the fire community would show up and we'd all just do like a work day for my birthday. I invited them to my birthday party, which was a work on my house day. So I provided food and drink all day, but we got like 25, you know, list of items done on my house. It's also an 1885 house, but with new systems. So like very finicky type property. I inherited the tenant downstairs who I love. He still lives at the property, but now he's moved upstairs. So the tenant downstairs, was great. We would hang out. He decided to move in upstairs and then eventually I moved out. We short-term the downstairs as the tenant is an owner because it's a primary residence for him.
And that is, I want to point out, that is a way around the, I don't want to say around, to work within the Denver Airbnb laws, which state you have to have that, you can only Airbnb your primary residence. So now Amberly isn't running it. It's the guy who lives there as his primary residence. He's running it.
Correct. He is the owner of it. And I just co-host with him, right? And then we have like a, you know, I help it. I'm the owner. And as the owner for Denver, you actually have to write a letter saying that like, yes, the tenant can use the property as a short-term rental. So that's what we've done.
Yep. And that's a win-win for both people.
So nuts and bolts, how are we doing on the finances on this? What's the, and how would we be doing on the finances if it was a long-term rental alone?
So my mortgage, taxes, and insurance all in is $3,000 a month on that property. Upstairs rents for $3,250. So it covers all of that plus like $100 of like incidentals. CapEx, vacancies, and repairs. I put aside a percentage of that because all the systems are new, but the home is older. Isn't that like weird? Or like, I don't need to put a ton away, but I also don't want to put too little away. And it has a new roof. So I put approximately like I think it's like $550 a month for that contingency. And then the downstairs, if it were long-term, would rent for about $2,000. Rent in Denver's changed a bit, so that was like 2 years ago. It's a one-bedroom, like, solo apartment. So about $2,000. Airbnb, I average about $6,500 a month between, well, $6,000 a month all year long, right? Wintertime, it's seasonal, less. Summertime, more, make about $8,000 a month in the summertime.
Okay, awesome. So the person upstairs is paying rent to you and rent Airbnb being the downstairs to get to this $6,000 to $8,000 a month total income number that you're describing there?
Yeah, so I say total income for the entire property is approximately $9,000 a month. And then obviously I have my expenses after that.
How do we get to the $9,000 a month? Is that Airbnb in both units?
No, just the bottom. So Airbnb on average makes about $6,000 and then the upstairs makes $3,250.
Okay. So the bottom unit's bringing in $6,000 and plus $3,250 for the upstairs. And then you're sharing this income with the tenant, I imagine, to some degree.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, awesome. Wow, that's all. Okay, so this property is hugely profitable. And I think that's a great way to work within the rules that Denver has set for short-term rentals here. So, okay. So now we're really minting money. We're continuing to live a $1,300 per month lifestyle. Perhaps it's increased to $1,500. I don't know. Are we relaxing a little bit at this point in the story? and we have the two income properties, the first property plus now this one downtown. What happens next? And what year are we at this point?
So that was I moved out late, 2021? And then I become responsible for another human and it's not a baby. So we decide that my partner who I'm dating is Canadian. We've known each other for 13 years. We were friends for 10. We decide that we're like making this work. So he's from Vancouver. So I'm now commuting back and forth. So I'm like sometimes in Denver, like living at one of the properties. Sometimes I'm in Vancouver building this relationship with my partner, John, husband now. And that's kind of going on. I'm socking away a ton of money towards index funds. So I'm doing like $800 a month towards index funds because I have like nothing in retirement, right? Other than a couple of years of 401k and IRAs, which I only learned about like 2015 or something. So I start putting like tons of money away towards my brokerage accounts and that's where all my money's going. I've got like a little bit on the side just to like, I don't know, maybe another property will happen to me. Who knows? And we're just going back and forth. And so that's kind of my life. My costs start to increase because as he comes down to the US, he cannot work. So then I'm responsible for him. When I go to Canada, it's a pandemic. He works in films. So I was contributing towards his rent during that time, just to be fair. I don't know. It just made sense. And so my costs have started to increase at that point. I think I'm probably spending like $3,000 a month between plane tickets and all the back and forth and stuff. And then I do that until end of 2022, where we bring him down for 6 months. And then I'm now like responsible completely for family finances, meaning everything I bring in, pays for him and for me. We moved back to Vancouver for visa reasons, have a baby. Costs now are like insane. I don't know where money's going. It's just flying out the window. And then we, buy a property in Longmont, which I had intended to consult Mindy, but I was literally 2 weeks into like having a baby. And this property came up on the street that our good friends live on. I have three friends on this street. And so we decided to buy it sight unseen. And so only had a little bit of money for this one because all my money has been going towards investments for like a year and a half. So only put 5% down on this property.
Okay. So this is an owner-occupied single-family home.
Correct. Yes.
And then this brings us essentially to the position that we're in today at this point, or was there anything else in the story?
Well, other than the fact that 3 months ago I took over all the expenses of the property of my father, who'd inherited it from his sister, and he just can't afford it. So me and my little sister have taken that on, and then I manage John's property in Vancouver. So we have tenants in there in the condo in like the best part of Vancouver in West End that we lived in for a while. And we're never getting rid of that.
Okay. So we've got a property nearby where my duplex was in kind of southwest Denver. We've got one downtown. We've got the primary in in Longmont. We've got a condo in Vancouver, and we've got your dad's property in
Ottawa, Canada.
Ottawa, Canada. Okay. So this 5-unit portfolio amassed over the last 3.5 years is incredible. And what's the overall picture? What is day-to-day life for you, your baby and your husband, and what's next?
It's chaos. My day-to-day is essentially I do my W-2 job. Thankfully, it's work from home. I absolutely love my team. So I do that. I have increased my salary greatly there as well. And take note, other companies. Absolutely love it. I got 6 months of mat leave too through my work. So that was really nice reprieve as well before coming back to a W-2 job. I manage all the rentals except for the manage all the long-term rentals, the short-term rentals by myself. As well as the Vancouver property. What is else day to day? Go for bike rides with Mindy. essentially my partner, since he cannot work for probably up to the next 24 months, he's responsible for fixing all the property. So like he goes and makes sure everything looks good. We've had a couple floods over the past 2 years of property. So he fixes all that up. Learns as he goes, fixes washers, dryers, things like that. So that's his job for our kind of partnership. Mine is to bring home the bacon. Going for bike rides, hanging out, going to the gym, trying to get back in shape, running FinTalks. I have an online community that I run. And yeah, it's a lot.
It is a lot. Before we jump into FinTalks, which I do want to cover, I want to dive into why you can work and John can't.
So we are importing him from Canada.
You're from Canada.
I am from Canada. Oh, you want to know that reason? I was born in the United States. So I was born in California. So I had a social security card. I have citizenship. So I have two passports. I can go between the two countries freely. And so I can work in the United States and have been working here since I moved to the US in 2007. And then he is only Canadian. So we're going through a marriage visa for him to be down here. And we just applied for the green card. And according to Denver, it could take up to 24 months for that to get approved. And once that's approved, or the work permit we've asked for, he'll now be allowed to work at that point. And he loves being home with our kid.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, you've got an adorable baby. I love being home with your kid. Every once in a while, he comes over to my house too.
So he's Wi-Fi.
Yes, he's Wi-Fi. That's like literally what he tells people.
Nice.
Yeah. Hey, if you want to be Wi-Fi too, come up to Longmont because this city is full of Wi-Fi people. So he can't work for 12 months, or it is probably going to be 12 months. Like if his green card came in tomorrow or his work visa came in tomorrow, could he then start work, or is there a specific amount of time that he has to be in the country before he can start working?
Great question. So the green card has been accepted, as in like the application has been accepted. Denver says for the green card to be like you get it in your hand, and essentially that's your residency permit. You are allowed to work at that moment. Denver's saying that will take 24 months. We have applied for what's called a work permit as well. The work permit is now taking about 12 months to get. So we might be able to get that work permit in 12 months. And then he'll be able to work without the green card. Because that's his, like, you're allowed to do it. He's also not allowed to leave the country until he gets the green card or a travel permit, which we also apply for. Essentially, it's kind of a big cluster. We have a lawyer for this, a gal who's in the FI community, actually, because it's so much to navigate.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot.
And there's no film here in Denver. So like when he does get to be able to work, now he has to figure out what does he do next. And, we've talked extensively about the fact that he'll probably just start some sort of, handyman business here in Longmont because he's very handy.
I can keep him busy.
Yes.
Okay. So just kind of zooming back out and going back to the story, we talked about the three properties you acquired, and the last one being the primary residence, covered by the income from the other properties, and then your job income here. And your husband had a condo, I presume, for many years, financed at a great rate in Vancouver, and that's why you kept it?
Canadian financing is different. So Canadian is 5-year ARMs or less. So you have like a 25-year period of your mortgage, and then you have to renew it every 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 years at a new interest rate. And then basically that's what's happening to a lot of Canadians right now, is they're getting interest rates that are double what they had originally gotten in the first place. The good thing about Canadian banks is that they actually vet people a lot more than US banks. But still, when you're going from a 2.5 rate, so we went from, I think, 1.89% to 3.85%. You know, that's a change. And some people, he thankfully bought this in 2011. There's only like 230,000 left on his condo mortgage. So like, it's not a big deal for us to have these jumps in interest rates. So we have to renew again in 5 more years. As of last year.
That's really interesting. I had no idea about the Canadian housing market. We often get asked about, from our Canadian friends, about whether we're going to have a Bigger Pockets Canada friendly rental calculator. And the answer has always been next year. So we'll get to it at some point for our Canadian friends. Don't worry.
I'll say one more thing about the condo. One of the reasons we want to keep it is because having property in Vancouver is such a luxury. Like, this condo now costs $550,000 to $600,000 to buy, right? And it's just not, that's so cost prohibitive for a one bedroom apartment. Like, that doesn't make sense, right? So we want to keep it for that reason. But also in Vancouver, development is a huge thing. So what that means is, someone will site the building and say like, hey, we're actually going to develop an 8-story building or a 16-story building. And then they pay out each resident a certain amount of money based on like what they're going to make off the building, right? In Vancouver, this specific building, right before COVID, was getting specced by developers, and it was getting specced for $1 million a property. So that's the other reason why we're keeping it, because if we can keep it and eventually the development's going to come into that area again, it left and now it might come back. There's zoning. We saw some surveyors for utilities. So that's the other reason we're keeping it, is because there could be a very big payout in the next like 10, 15 years from the property. And that was 8-story. It's now going to be zoned for 16. So that's great.
And so what's next? How are you going to continue expanding the empire?
Yeah, I'm definitely looking at, always open. I just had talked to Mindy last week and I was like, so we want to have another baby. That's our next step. That, and then we figure we'll take on another property right after that. We've been fixing up our home. So we just got rid of all the popcorn ceilings in it, painted it all. We've got a kitchen. We just ordered countertops this weekend at IKEA. It's 15% off right now. It's not going to be by the time this airs, but, great for anyone in this call. So ordered them this weekend. So we've got the kitchen going on. And then basically our house is complete at that point for the updates we want to do to it. We'll replace all the drawers. They have a bunch of dings in them. But at that point, like, it's in so much better shape than we bought it. So then we feel comfortable taking on a new property. And so more than likely, we'll probably do some sort of owner-occupied property, which we want to actually fix up with two, small children. Always a great idea. And then we'll rent this one out. This one isn't going to be great numbers, right? It's a single family home. We paid a lot for it. High interest rate, like, not like today's, but like 5.85% on this place. So quite high. So it won't cash flow the way that, others have, but we want to hold on to it because we really love the property.
Awesome. And I love the fixing up the property with the little ones, because like our 10-month-old is super happy in a 100-square-foot room with some toys. There's the whole thing done doesn't really make a difference at that point. So
yeah, they just want to spend time with you. I can tell you from personal experience that fixing up a property with two little ones is the easiest thing you'll ever do, and you should totally do it. It's bring them over to my house when you need to do dusty work, because it can be a chore, but yeah, you can also do it. I mean, I did several with two little ones and it's totally fine. And with John not having a job right now, he can bang out that property. I teased about FinTalks, and then I want to circle back to FinTalks because I find this so fascinating. Let's talk about your Tuesday FinTalks. And for people who don't know what this is, what is your little FinTalk session?
Yeah, I also call it a little FinTalk session. So FinTalks is a community of people that I started in March of 2020. As we already know from the story, March 2020, I was going through this crazy breakup. I paid $80,000 of money, like everything I had towards this property. Airbnb went to zero, like the world's shutting down. I'm sitting in my room, like eating popcorn for dinner, drinking wine. My partner at the time had taken all the furniture out of the house. So I had a couch, a TV, a stripper pole in my kitchen because I didn't even have a, I may as well, you know, just exercise and have fun here. Had that since I was 21. Haven't had it like in a house since then. And like a bed. That's literally everything I had in this property at that time. So pretty sad state of affairs. I decide I've always wanted to do some sort of financial education for people. I have a lot of knowledge. And there's a lot of people, you know, who could be hurting during COVID. So I decided to start doing just like daily finance talks on Facebook Live. I got a little bit of a following. And then some people had mentioned, hey, we should meet up and like talk. And I was like, great, why don't we do this? Mark Troutman, OG of my Fin Talks. So it started with me and five friends. I would pick a topic and we would get on for 1 hour, everyone drinking like a glass of wine or like a beer, all alone in our houses and talk about the financial topic. It started to grow and spread. So at my highest heights of Fin Talks, we had 55 people joining every single Tuesday. And then Google was really upset with me for sending out a calendar invite to 300 people every week and decided I was not allowed to do that anymore. So then I had to change it out to MailChimp. And now we average about 31 to 35 people. So I choose a topic every single week. I send an email saying like, here's the topic. Here's why I'm thinking about it. Here's some questions to ponder. Jump on the call and let's talk it out. And then that's what we do. And so people have saved thousands of dollars from, you know, having these conversations about taxes or mental health, meditation, 401ks, like everything, right? And we become a really close community. So I then started an in-person meetup for Fin Talks third year this past year. And so we all meet up in person in Colorado and do like a weekend event. And yeah, it's really fun. I've been doing it since March of 2020, every single Tuesday.
Awesome. And this is free to attend as long as you are willing to replace your roof or hang a door or fix the windows at one of the properties. Is that?
You know my style. So it's been free for the past 3 years. I'm actually changing that up literally like this next 3 weeks. I'm going to make it a very nominal $10 a month. And it's just paid yearly at that point. And I'm going to see if it survives. It might not. And the reason I'm doing that is it's been 3.5 years that I've been doing this. I checked it. It's 182 sessions that I have done for Fin Talks. And my life has changed a lot in that time. And so I think this is kind of my test to see if I should keep it going. I also have to pay Zoom memberships and all this stuff. So I decided, you know what, let's just try this. And so I'm basically sending out the email literally today, which is just telling everyone, hey, if you want to join, it's $10 a month. For a yearly membership. And then if not, then we might just go down to one time a month and I'm going to enjoy my 3 extra weeks a month open.
Awesome. And where can people find out more about this, about these Fin Talks?
Yeah, amberlygrant.com/FinTalks.
All right, Amberly, you are a member of the FI community. You are Coast FI. Do you have any advice for somebody who is just getting started?
First of all, find community. So there are so many events. We're doing a cruise in January, right? So January 27th, Mindy's joining. I'm joining. We have 39 finance freaks joining this cruise. It's literally like $500. It's nothing. And so go to an event. Go to Economy, Camp Fies, come to Fin Talks. Find community because I think the best part of the journey is being able to actually talk openly about finances with people. Like my friends at the gym now talk about finances because I'm just going to say it. Like I'll say what I make. It's not a problem to me because we're all in this together to like bring each other up, right? So that's my number one advice. The second advice is if you are, I find a lot of people who are starting on their financial journey, they get really caught in numbers. They get really caught in like reading books and knowledge. But after knowledge comes action. And so whether that's buying your first property or engaging even like, you know, a bank for financing for a property to see what you can even afford, those types of actions will just get you one step closer to what your goal is. And I think it's really important. And I always like to say, build the parachute on the way down, like take that action and see what happens. And then, you know, you get to pivot from there.
Love it. I think that's great advice. It's really hard to take action if no one else is in your world is on the same page, or, you know, they're along for the ride with you. And I think that's something that I think speaks to your journey, because you had this community. I bet you that community was what allowed you to spend that $1,200, $1,300 a month, which really I think is the foundation for all of your success over the last 3 to 4 years. And in addition to the creativity and the you know, opportunism and finding these deals and these that new job, but that foundation of frugality just meant that there's no way you could fail. Really, it's just a matter of time before you became, you know, before you built wealth in some form or other with it. And I think that the community that you built probably is a big factor in that, and helping you defray expenses in certain cases, but also just live a happy, wonderful life at a very low cost in the Denver area. So,
yep. And like my Syntox community is so much smarter than I am. Like, any problem you bring to them, like, they solve it. They got it.
All right, Amberlee, this was a lot of fun. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I think that there's a lot of things to learn for many of our listeners, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you both. I appreciate it.
And we will talk to you soon. Okay, Scott, that was Amberlee Grant, and that was such an impressive story. Being a member of the FI community, being Coast FI, she has all of these fantastic opportunities for two reasons. She's frugal and she has a lot of courage. She's frugal in that she doesn't spend every dime that comes in. She saves it. And she has courage to take advantage of opportunities when they present themselves.
Yeah. I think it boils down to that spending pattern. $1,300 a month in Denver in 2017 to 2021-ish, in that period. It is possible. You got a bike to work. You got a house hack. You got to make a bunch of smart decisions. But if you can earn a $55,000 a year job and spend $1,300 a month, opportunities are just going to explode in your life over the next couple of years in ways that you can't predict. That's the fundamental thing here. You're piling up cash and you have every option in the world for another property to buy or a business to start or whatever. You have essentially no risk in your life and unlimited upside because of that low expense load. And to her point, community was a big factor in that. So I think that's the underpinning secret sauce here, is the ability, the option, and the, you know, to sustain a lifestyle of that at that level for an indefinite period of time, and then the opportunism to go after the opportunities that presented themselves one by one to her over the following year. She'll live the rest of her life with financial abundance because of that foundation.
Yeah. And you know, Scott, you just said something really funny. You said opportunities that you can't predict. That's what you're investing for. That's what you're saving for. That's why you're not spending every dime that comes in, so that you have a pile of cash, so that when an amazing opportunity pops up, you can pounce on it. And that's exactly what she did over and over and over again, and will continue to do.
Probably makes you a really good employee too, if you're able to find all those things in your personal life, ways to cut costs and increase opportunity. So not surprised she got a huge raise and has been wonderfully treated by her new company.
Exactly. All right, Scott, should we get out of here?
Let's do it.
That wraps up this episode of the Bigger Pockets Money Podcast. He is Scott Trench, and I am Mindy Jensen, saying adieu, cockatoo.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please give us a 5-star review on Spotify or Apple. And if you're looking for even more money content, feel free to visit our YouTube channel at youtube.com/biggerpocketsmoney.
Bigger Pockets Money was created by Mindy Jensen and Scott Trench. Produced by Kaylin Bennett. Editing by Exodus Media. Copywriting by Nate Weintraub. Lastly, a big thank you to the Bigger Pockets team for making this show possible. The market is changing, and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom, and the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into real estate investing or take it to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With the Bigger Pockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals, enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and boom, instantly matched with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only.
Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all host and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.